Chapter 10. Would wait for her pay till, come, Laura, let's hear from you, my girl. Emily and Laura were about the same age, between 17 and 18. Emily was fair and pretty, girlish and diffident, blue eyes and light hair. Laura had a proud bearing, and a somewhat mature look. She had fine, clean-cut features. Her complexion was pure white and contrasted vividly with her black hair and eyes. She was not what one calls pretty, she was beautiful. She said, I will go to St. Louis too, sir. I will find a way to get there. I will make a way. And I will find a way to help myself along, and do what I can to help the rest too. She spoke it like a princess. Mrs. Hawkins smiled proudly and kissed her, saying in a tone of fond reproof, so one of my girls is going to turn out and work for her living. It's like your pluck and spirit, child, but we will hope that we haven't got quite down to that yet. The girl's eyes beamed affection under her mother's caress. Then she straightened up, folded her white hands in her lap, and became a splendid iceberg. Clay's dog put up his brown nose for a little attention, and got it. He retired under the table with an apologetic yelp, which did not affect the iceberg. Judge Hawkins had written and asked Clay to return home and consult with him upon family affairs. He arrived the evening after this conversation, and the whole household gave him a rapturous welcome. He brought sadly needed help with him, consisting of the savings of a year, and a half of work, nearly $200 in money. It was a ray of sunshine which, to this easy household, was the earnest of a clearing sky. Bright and early in the morning the family were astir, and all were busy preparing Washington for his journey, at least all but Washington himself, who sat apart, steeped in a reverie. When the time for his departure came, it was easy to see how fondly all loved him, and how hard it was to let him go, notwithstanding they had often seen him go before, in his St. Louis schooling days. In the most matter-of-course way they had borne the burden of getting him ready for his trip, never seeming to think of his helping in the matter. In the same matter-of-course way Clay had hired a horse and cart. And now that the goodbyes were ended he bundled Washington's baggage in, and drove away with the exile. At Swansea Clay paid his stage fare, stowed him away in the vehicle, and saw him off. Then he returned home and reported progress, like a committee of the whole. Clay remained at home several days. He held many consultations with his mother upon the financial condition of the family, and talked once with his father upon the same subject, but only once. He found a change in that quarter which was distressing. Years of fluctuating fortune had done their work. Each reverse had weakened the father's spirit, and impaired his energies. His last misfortune seemed to have left hope and ambition dead within him. He had no projects, formed no plans. Evidently he was a vanquished man. He looked worn and tired. He inquired into Clay's affairs and prospects, and when he found that Clay was doing pretty well, and was likely to do still better, it was plain that he resigned himself with easy facility to look to the sun for a support, and he said, keep yourself informed of poor Washington's condition and movements, and help him along all you can, Clay. The younger children, also, seemed relieved of all fears and distresses, and very ready and willing to look to Clay for a livelihood. Within 3 days a general tranquility and satisfaction reigned in the household. Clay's $180 or $190 had worked a wonder. The family were as contented, now, and as free from care as they could have been with a fortune. It was well that Mrs. Hawkins held the purse, otherwise the treasure would have lasted but a very little while. It took but a trifle to pay Hawkins' outstanding obligations, for he had always had a horror of debt. When Clay bade his home goodbye and set out to return to the field of his labors, he was conscious that henceforth he was to have his father's family on his hands as pensioners. But he did not allow himself to chafe at the thought, for he reasoned that his father had dealt by him with a free hand, and a loving one all his life, And now that hard fortune had broken his spirit, it ought to be a pleasure, not a pain, to work for him. The younger children were born and educated dependents. They had never been taught to do anything for themselves, and it did not seem to occur to them to make an attempt now. The girls would not have been permitted to work for a living under any circumstances whatever. It was a southern family, and of good blood, and for any person except Laura, either within or without the household, to have suggested such an idea would have brought upon the suggester the suspicion of being a lunatic. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.